bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't
care.
I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome in to Bet the Board, Week 2, Monday Night Football Edition. I'm your co-host, Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. The man on the other end of the line, you can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. Payne, good to have you back, my friend.
Yeah, slow Monday. Wasn't the best Sunday. We get the Bucks there. We get the Vikings there. Unfortunately, the Bills fall short and the Houston Texans, well, they're just the Houston Texans.
Yeah, Ryan Mallett with a chance to get into the end zone for a potentially improbable comeback late in that football game was not to be. Simply amazing. When I watch a game on Thursday night between Denver and Kansas City, thinking, all right, got a shot to get this under bet home at under 43. Manning goes 80 yards in 10 plays, aided by 96 penalties. And I go watch Ryan Mallett do absolutely nothing to try and create a potential backdoor. But that's kind of been the nature of the business so far. And Payne, we talked about it off the air yesterday morning, saying, you know, we really felt on Thursday we gave people a good indication of where the market was going, let people get out ahead of the numbers. And it just goes to show sometimes the players do have to go out in the field to execute for us to cash our tickets.
And this is probably a little long-winded, but, you know, it's kind of like the stock market. And, you know, using the Eagles as an example, it's a 4.5-point game. When we talk about it, they close nearly 7. Unfortunately, we can't hit the cash-out button when, you know, on Thursday we give a stock out that's $4.5, and 24 to 48 hours later it's $7. We just can kind of give the best market indicators, and I think we absolutely crushed that last week. Whether it's talking about a dummy up on the Minnesota game where everybody thinks Lions plus 3 are the side, and that couldn't be anything further from the truth. Minnesota was the true position line, 1.5 and 2. Same thing with the Falcons-Giants game. Some late game mess-ups from Coughlin and Eli Manning again, but the key there was trying to obtain 3. It never came, but you could have got there cheap on the buy. So just doing, you know, general indicators like that, we knew Luke Kuechly was going to be out from day one. That line closes roughly 2.8. We got 3.5. Anytime you can beat the market around that 3, it's a good indication of long-term success.
Yeah, and you also had the absence of star Latulele on the defensive line. And as you mentioned, the Texans just could not get things going in offense.
58 throws from Ryan Mallett. 58.
Well, we want to talk about disappointments and everything else. And trust me, there are a couple teams that we're about to spout off on. But I'll let you go first, Payne, on a team that you found most disappointing so far in Week 2.
It has to be the Dolphins. I mean, they've been outplayed in 6 of 8 quarters so far. They haven't played a playoff team yet. They continue to be the Miami Dolphins. They play to the level of their competition. Joe Philbin has a soft, soft team. We talk about it on the defensive side of the ball. You bring in Ndamukong Suh, and the defensive line still getting ran on. They're very thin at linebacker. They're thin at cornerback. We talked about the huge loss before the season in Lewis Delmas, how last year the games he missed, offenses and teams scored 18 more points per game on average. Walt Akins might have been the worst defensive player to lace up the cleats this past weekend. Offensively, offensive line's an absolute mess. They don't have any guard play. They rush back Brandon Albert. He was about 75%. And that's at best. He wasn't in shape. What happens when you bring a 330-pound man back to the game, not in shape? He pulls a hamstring this week. So the offensive line's a mess. Everybody's injured. It's a paper-thin unit. And this is a team that I think is going to struggle a little bit moving forward.
And the Dolphins, a 3-point favorite at BetOnline for their game this weekend against the Buffalo Bills, total at 43.5. Any idea, Payne, the severity of Lamar Miller as his injury? Is he listed as questionable, albeit 6 days away from kickoff?
I was told from someone internally that it's a good limp, so he was seen going to the locker room afterwards. He was getting some work done. Who knows how bad it is? It's not going to be a long-term thing, but it could be an issue this week.
a good limp. Sounds like how I felt after the late games yesterday afternoon. When you talk about the Dolphins and how disappointing they were, I want to go right at the Philadelphia Eagles, a team that I'm sitting on a futures ticket with, which I'm ready to pretty much light on fire at this point. An 0-2 performance is one thing, but to look the way they did offensively against the Dallas Cowboys, knowing how important it was in a divisional game, the Cowboys lose Tony Romo, and Sam Bradford just looked absolutely lost. I do have to give the Eagles defense credit. They kept him in the game a lot longer, and they probably should have been competitive. But offensively, there was no continuity on the ground. There was nothing to speak of in the passing game. And even trailing 13-3, the Eagles are driving to make it a one-score game. Either Sam Bradford is colorblind, or he lost a bet to Sean Lee, and that's why he had to throw the ball right to him into a congested end zone. I don't even know what to think about Philadelphia and where we have to go tempering our expectations from starting the season as a potential favorite, not only in the division but to win the NFC, to looking like an 0-2 team and Chip Kelly starting to fill out his resume, maybe trying to get down to Austin to potentially take over in the college ranks.
Yeah, for the Eagles and Chip Kelly, it's not a race thing. It's not a white or black thing. It's an ego thing. And what we saw in the offseason was he wants to invest his dollars, his money, on defense, and he thinks his offensive scheme is good enough to kind of plug and play. They're in a contract battle with Evan Mathis. He ends up going to the Broncos. The offensive line's a train wreck. You can only run so much zone scheme to cover up that mess. You can only throw so many short passes to cover up the issues on the offensive line, and that's really where it is right now. DeMarco Murray was on pace for nearly 2,000 yards a year ago. He's on pace for 88 yards this season, 11 yards rushing after two games. Sam Bradford, not comfortable at all. You can kind of see him aiming the ball. He threw almost three balls in the dirt yesterday, and it's just an issue. Fortunately, they're in a good division where there's not another team over 500. You're talking about 0-2 teams, the Redskins at 1-1, the Cowboys 2-0, obviously, but now you lose Romo. So there's still hope there because of the division they play in.
Yeah, and we'll have plenty of thoughts on Romo and exactly what that does to change the landscape in just a few minutes. Another team that disappointed this weekend for you, Payne.
I think the Texans, I think that's a team that obviously from us, when we look at it from a gambling perspective, and it's much tougher knowing going in what are the sharp sides. So you kind of know where these games should fall, and when they lose, it kind of makes things a little more disappointing. This is a Houston team, even defensively. Yeah, they were okay. But when you needed the stop, you couldn't get one. And that's where you rely on when you have J.J. Watt. You go and get Vince Wilfork. Average quarterback play. We talked about this last week. Both guys are average. Flip a coin. It doesn't matter who's going to play. When one of them has a bad day, it's going to be a really bad day for this team. I think you need to stick with one guy, hopefully get some consistency in there. And if with consistency, maybe you can get above average performances here and there. But they're both average quarterbacks, and you need a quarterback in this league. That's the bottom line.
And you mentioned the Houston Texans, their defense actually being an issue. They go down the field, tie that game at 17 apiece, and you think this is where the team has to turn the corner. They allow Carolina to march the length of the field. And I guess I have to give credit to Cam Newton, along with the rest of the Carolina Panthers. It's a team I didn't think had a ton of weapons that was going to be able to do a whole lot. They've started 2-0 this year, and they found a way to kind of not put a dagger in Houston, but to make a strong statement with an answer back there. And the final two disappointments for me, Payne, were both defensive efforts from AFC football teams. We'll start with the Baltimore Ravens. I don't know what you call that. You're 0-1 on the season. You go out west, and of course, we saw plenty of professional money come in on the Raiders. But Baltimore got back in that game, and they couldn't get a stop, especially late, to try and get off the field. They looked like they were out of place. They looked old. And sure, no Terrell Suggs, which limits the pass rush a little bit, but that was a unit that was pretty terrible. And then Rex Ryan, you're talking about this being a Super Bowl 49.5 or whatever you want to call it in Buffalo, and you tell me the Bills' offense hangs 32 points on the board. I'm going to tell you they cover 99 out of 100 times, but you give up 40 to New England, and it still remains Rex Ryan matched up against the New England Patriots just doesn't have an answer to get over the hump, a little bit different than when you're catching 10 like he did a lot of the times as head coach of the Jets.
Absolutely, and Rex Ryan in the Buffalo Bills in general, they can't get over that mental hurdle of beating a fully stocked New England team. They did it last year without Brady. But, you know, again, ego. Rex Ryan said, you know, we're going to play man-on-man. We're going to be that team. We're going to bully you around. And you're sticking linebackers on Deion Lewis, going one-on-one down the sidelines. There's just no adjustments made. Tyrod Taylor, you look at the box score, he throws three interceptions. One was a Watkins drop at the end of the game. One was kind of just a sort of Hail Mary to get in field goal position before the to end the first half. But he completed almost 78% of his passes. Yeah, he hangs 32 points. They missed the point after. They were settled going for two because of that and how the game kind of landed. The offense did plenty here. Huge disappointment for the loudmouth Rex Ryan. And now we're looking at a coach at this point who's under 500 in his career. So we'll see what the Buffalo Bills bring moving forward. They're a tough-nosed team, and they're facing a very dainty team next week. So that'll be an interesting one to watch.
What about Tom Brady throwing the ball 60 times?
I think it was a positive. I think you're going to spread these teams out. The offensive line, we know the issues up the middle, starting three rookies. You don't have your center. And we talk about the short passing game, allowing your offensive line not to hold those blocks very long. And when you're going to spread out Deion Lewis on linebackers, it's going to be a mismatch every single time.
And I'll say one thing for those fantasy players. You mentioned some of the struggles for DeMarco Murray Payne earlier. Man, if you have Deion Lewis right now, you have to be sitting pretty knowing you were able to probably pick him up on the waiver wire. As this guy has really given the Patriots that dynamic they need for a guy coming out of the backfield, catching balls, and keeping defenses honest.
Yeah, when we went the little fantasy nugget pre-week one, we gave out Deion Lewis. Unfortunately, not on my fantasy team. We decided to keep D'Angelo Williams, who we didn't start this week.
Yeah, not on my fantasy team either, and much like you, I know we traded notes, and both of us sitting D'Angelo Williams on our respective teams. Not exactly pretty with his three touchdowns of productivity on the bench, as we know he'll get relegated to second string with Le'Veon Bell coming back. But enough of the Monday morning negativity. What a team surprised you in a positive manner?
I think you have to look at the Bucs.
Why did I know you were going to go with your boy Jameis Winston right off the bat? If I had a bet, he would have been a 1-9 favorite. That's exactly the direction you would have elected to go.
You know, you draft him number one overall for a reason. Consistency is always going to be an issue for young guys, especially at the quarterback position. But that drive right before half, you get the momentum score, which was huge, and the throw. There might be three or four guys in the NFL that can make that throw, and that's why he's drafted number one. They did try to give the game away late with turnovers. But the defense held pretty strong. You go in on the road, division game as a double-digit dog. They closed 8.5, obviously, but and you get the outright win. It's just a huge, huge win. It's a confidence booster. The rest of that division, again, wide open. And as Jameis Winston continues to get some games under his belt, this could be a sneaky, sneaky team moving forward.
Well, I won't quite go wide open. I think the Falcons have been pretty impressive in two games and now get a fortuitous matchup on the road at Dallas with a chance to go to 3-0. For me, Payne, a team that really surprised me, I think for all the talk from the way they looked week one, I'm going to go with the Denver Broncos offense. They started slow against Kansas City but seemed to find their stride and swagger. Now, I think Peyton Manning is going to show the effects of flinging the ball around the yard 40-plus times early in the season. I know you mentioned, and I thought was a great analogy, Denver's got to think about putting him on a pitch count, so he's got something in that arm late in the year. But I think the Denver Broncos, everyone penciling their demise in early, myself, maybe included to a certain extent, but I didn't say it was gloom or doom. Pretty impressive the way they were able to march down the field against Kansas City, and thanks to some Chiefs generosity, able to get a key divisional win and put their impressive streak intact, or keep it intact, I should say, for AFC West dominance.
Yeah, great last drive. I think the key here more so is the Kansas City Chiefs, 5 turnovers, 0 for 7 on third down. Peyton Manning threw an interception, could have been 3 or 4 more, but at the end of the day, they're 2-0. It's the NFL. You get a road division win. And I think the equivalent here is, you know, when you have a supermodel girlfriend, you don't get mad at her because she doesn't do laundry. And if you're 2-0 in the NFL, it's a great, great start.
That's all that really matters. I mean, starting the season, winning ugly. We know the stats on teams that start 0-2. And there are plenty of teams that fall into that distinction now. And it leads me to my next question. How do you begin to assess some of these teams that are 0-2? The Eagles, Ravens, Giants, the list goes on. Not so much for their season prospects, but handicapping them moving forward. Do we think we're going to get a little bit of value as play-on teams? We do see a number of these teams favored for their Week 3 matchups.
Yeah, Week 3 becomes humongous, especially when you're talking about teams like Seattle. I know we covered it last week, teams that start 0-2 since the expansion to 12-team playoffs. They make the playoffs just 12% of the time, so it was a huge game to lose. But a lot of these teams can bounce back. I don't think any of the divisions are settled at this point. We know Sam Chicago Bears are looking at a tough, tough game this weekend, playing a pissed-off Seattle team. So I think it's still early, especially the way the NFL is this year. I think it's really wide open. I don't see a team that does not have flaws. I don't see any team that's going to really run away with it. So I think this becomes the huge week for those 0-2 teams.
And you mentioned teams with flaws. May as well start with a team like the Dallas Cowboys, who are going to be without the services of not only Dez Bryant for looks like 10 to 12 weeks, but without Tony Romo. We've seen injuries to Jay Cutler for Sam's Bears, who are going to be massive underdogs on the road in Seattle.
Why are they my Bears?
I mean, you cover the Bears for a living. Therefore, that makes them your Bears, whether you want to
no,
own them or
doesn't.
Not. They're your Bears.
It goes hand in hand for Chicago guys. If you're a Chicago guy, Doc Martens are yours, and the Chicago Bears are yours.
Well, we can claim, maybe Sam, if he wants, can claim ownership of Al Capone, too, if that'll help his street cred out a little bit. But the Detroit Lions looks like Matthew Stafford is going to be questionable for their game. I guess the division race, how do we even begin to look at the NFC East at this particular point? Eagles 0-2, I know we mentioned them briefly. Cowboys 2-0, Giants 0-2, Redskins 1-1, a pivotal showdown Thursday, which of course we'll break down in great detail on the Thursday night podcast. But do you see any value in this potential division trying to take a team that's not quite on the pace early?
You know,
the Eagles? You want to double up on the Eagles to win the division?
It's wide open. The Redskins, Kirk Cousins, gets his third victory as a starter in the NFL. I believe that takes him to 3-10. Congrats, Kirk Cousins. But I think that's kind of short-lived. The Giants could easily be 2-0 here. I think you might maybe look towards them. Maybe they can kind of bounce back a little bit when you talk about their errors. So to speak, it's Eli Manning, the $84 million man, and Tom Coughlin, who's been in this business a decade, having basically endgame brain farts, is the cause for 0-2 there. You think that's easily correctable, or you would hope if you're a Giants fan. So maybe the Giants at this point.
It's definitely a division that'll bear watching. And I know all the talk coming into the year was that the NFC South might get a team into the postseason with a 500 or less than record. Maybe it'll be the NFC East right now, the way things are going. If Dallas struggles with Brandon Weeden taking snaps and the Eagles continue to look like an anemic offensive unit. As far as some of these teams and identifying line value moving forward, I guess, Payne, the game that really jumped off the board for me, an early kickoff, the Rams, we kind of thought that they were overvalued going into Washington. They were going to be listed as a 2.5-point favorite on the Westgate look-ahead lines playing host to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Well, the market opens Pittsburgh minus 2.5. Current number on this game, Pittsburgh a 1-point favorite at BetOnline, total of 47. Are we buying this overreaction in the market for just 1 week's worth of results?
Well, first of all, you kind of reminded me for the first week and God knows how long I wasn't on the Raiders, Skins, or Jaguars, all went straight up. So that's kind of a tough subject. But I think, you know, you'll get back the Rams here. I think this is a nice buy point even at 1. Looks like Gurley might be a go this week. Trey Mason came back a little bit last week. The Steelers defense, still a concern. And I think you can kind of ground and pound them here a little bit. Tough place to play. Steelers get a big win. Now you're kind of traveling a little bit. Non-conference, non-division game here. I think the Rams are definitely the way to look. And it probably closes a favorite.
And Bucks Texans, we've seen this number adjust as well. Right now, the Houston Texans, a 6.5-point favorite at BetOnline. We saw 8.5 potentially the look-ahead number. Are we buying or selling this 2-point line move on the strength of Tampa's win outright as a double-digit dog in New Orleans and the Texans' continued struggles?
Yeah, not only 2-point move, but 2-point move through the 7. Not really ready to jump into bed with Houston yet. It's tough to lay a number like this with their quarterback issues. This is obviously a huge, huge game for them. they'll throw some pressure at Jameis Winston this week. You can bet on that. The blitzes will be coming fast and furious. And one thing with the Tampa 2, it leaves the middle of the defense wide open. And Ryan Mallett, if he's going to be able to operate some easy throws, which he needs, that's kind of be the area he's going to be able to exploit a little bit here. I'm not running to bet this game. I'm going to watch this one for sure. I think the move here is granted. I really do. I don't think Tampa was as bad as they looked in week one. Probably not as good as they looked in week two, but I want nothing to do with Houston and their quarterback issues laying this kind of number.
Well, a perfect segue to the team that Tampa just beat, Carolina. 2.5 on the look-ahead number, now 3.5 on at Bet Online. Saints season kind of on the brink. Can we make a case for the dog here going on the road, given how porous that defense has looked and how ineffective the offense has looked for extended stretches this year?
You know, not to give too much away, because I might end up like Richie April, gone. I think 3.5.
I'm not asking you to show all your cards. Just trying to pick your brain a little bit as we whet the appetite for the week 3 slate.
Yeah, 3.5 isn't going to last. Let's just put it that way. This Carolina team might be the death of us. Every single year there's that one team we continue to fade. They become our Achilles heel. We're now 0-2 in Carolina games. And I'm guaranteeing you the professionals will come right back to the well, even if Luke Kuechly and Star Lucatelli are in this game. The hooks are not going to last on this game, I don't believe.
We're due, buddy. We're due to try and get a piece of the Carolina Panthers. Falcons, Cowboys. Falcons right now a 1.5-point favorite going to Big D. Of course, this line move a lot because of Tony Romo. They would have been a 4.5-point dog in this particular spot had this matchup taken place week two. In your opinion, is Tony Romo worth a little bit less than a touchdown to the number, or do we think you combine his absence with Dez Bryant being shelved that maybe odds makers aren't doing enough to adjust the Cowboys' power number?
Yeah, I think it's a culmination of everything. No Dez Bryant, no Tony Romo. We know what Brandon Whedon is at this point in his career in this age. He comes in, obviously, off the bench, throws a nice touchdown pass to kind of complete that upset there. But now you get a week to prepare for Brandon Whedon. You break out the film. You get to see what he has. Atlanta's defense is much, much improved. I really like this team. We talked about him in the preseason podcast, playing him to win the division plus $2. This kind of feels like a huge game for Atlanta here. Dallas is now 2-0. They're looking at the rest of the division. We know how they play at home. I think the move is definitely warranted since we've jumped on this podcast from pick to minus 1.5. Atlanta can really cement things starting 3-0. Haven't done much information-wise on this game or much research into this game, but pick 'em felt like a bad number.
Yeah, it did feel a little bit short, and I know that you were high on the Falcons coming into the season, talking about how the change in culture would definitely get this franchise headed in the right direction, and they look to be a team much more confident in late games, finding ways to execute. We know what Matt Ryan is capable of to a certain extent and how dangerous a weapon Julio Jones is. This team will only get better with Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman getting rolling on the ground. And one last game, as I don't want to try and get through the entire board knowing that we'll break all of these games down on Thursday. The Ravens, backs against the wall. Cincinnati Bengals 2-0 in the division. You're looking at the Ravens, a soft 3 at BetOnline, actually 2.5 now as I look at my screen. And with a total on this particular game of 44.5. Are the Ravens officially dead and buried, or is this potentially where they can make a last stand?
Well, this is going to be their last stance, I think, when you look at this division. And we're looking at a soft 3 now. Did open 2.5 at some sharp, sharp places, so I think you have to respect that move a little bit here. Cincinnati, not overly impressive in their victories. Turned the ball over a bunch last week. For me, don't know if I'm going to be on this game yet, but this is definitely a last stance for Baltimore. This will be a Super Bowl-like atmosphere. This will be their Super Bowl. Starting 0-3, it just cannot happen. And this is the first time they've started 0-2 in the last 10 seasons.
And this is a chance to go home where they've typically had a ton of success, especially against division opponents. Will be interesting to keep an eye on that line move and see where it goes as we try and identify a little bit of line value. For those folks tuning in to the Bet the Board podcast for the first time, make sure that you subscribe on iTunes or SoundCloud to get all the most recent downloads. Everything is there every Monday and Thursday for you for ease of listening. You can always check us out at our home base as well, toddstake.com. And if you're not following Payne Insider on Twitter, I encourage you to do so. You can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. Peyton, the Monday night game, we look at the Colts and Jets, and as we got on this call, we said there was kind of only one way to look in this particular football game. However, all the key numbers seem to have disappeared in the last 20 minutes or so since we got started. The Indianapolis Colts, a 6.5-point favorite, total of 46 at Bet Online. Where do we begin to go handicapping this particular contest?
Well, we do this pod on Mondays at the 11 o'clock Eastern time. And we know in the business that's kind of the first moving window. So we have kind of missed the 7 on the Jets. For me, the situation here, obviously the Colts 0-1, Jets look very impressive. I think the Colts from a situational standpoint, likely the side here, but from a numbers perspective, I made this game with home field advantage about a 5.9, so there was value taking the 7. And then when you kind of break down the game, you talk about your top three corners being out for Indianapolis. Arthur Jones goes to the IR. Mathis is questionable. T.Y. Hilton is questionable. Even if those guys play, I can tell you right now, they are not going to be near 100%. So those are some things to look at when you're talking about this Monday night game.
And I think, as you mentioned, the dog clearly, on a number standpoint, you can look at the Jets' physical imposing style, should be able to have their way on the ground. And as you mentioned, a lot of injuries for that Colts defensive backfield, a unit that's not extremely stout, even with their top team in there. Not a whole lot of depth to try and factor into that equation. And one thing, Payne, that I actually wanted to pick your brain on a little bit, I meant to get to it earlier in the show, missed extra points. We've seen more missed extra points in this stat, courtesy of our producer, Sam, more missed extra points in the first 2 weeks of the 2015 season than we saw all of last year. We've already seen the Pittsburgh Steelers look to start going for two nearly every sequence. Do you have any plans to factor some of this into your handicapping, whether it be around key numbers or to try and make adjustments as we look to go forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the NFL got what they wanted. We mentioned this last week. They're down to about 92% on the makes from 99%. It's opening up the game a little bit. It's definitely making key numbers and teasers less valuable than they once were. And then we talk about specific situations. We mentioned this Pittsburgh team in our preseason podcast. I didn't think it would come to fruition this early in the season, but we know late in the year, those swirling winds, it's one of the toughest places to kick. 35-yarders and now 33-yarders for the extra points are no gimme. They bring in Josh Scobie. He has not been able to hit the barred side of a barn this season so far. He misses one this past week again, so they decided to go with the twos. We've seen Buffalo miss point afters with Dan Carpenter. It's becoming a league-wide thing, that's for sure, and we're going to see these teams going for it more. Shocked the Patriots haven't really gotten involved, but they have one of the best kickers in football, so those 33-yarders for Gutkowski are becoming layups, and it's almost becoming an advantage now that you have a good kicker making these point afters. It'll be interesting to see moving forward, but definitely teasers and key numbers being affected by this stuff.
Yeah, it's always interesting. I know a lot of people ask those questions early in the season using our hashtag AskBetTheBoard, and encourage people to continue to do so if there's certain issues they want addressed. I know we don't get to each and every game every week, but we said that from day one. That wasn't necessarily the goal of the podcast. It was more some big picture issues. And of course, key numbers and understanding what to do with them through those teaser windows definitely plays a big, big role. Payne, we'll put a bow on week two. Of course, we'll recap what we see tonight in the Monday night game on Thursday, if anything major comes out for the Jets and Colts. But anything else, final words to try and impart wisdom on our listeners before we reconvene Thursday morning?
Nothing. That's it. Quick, easy, short.
Hey, that's all it takes sometimes. You want to get down to the nitty-gritty, cover some of the things that have surprised, some of the things that have disappointed, and make sure those power numbers are adjusting fluidly. For Payne Insider, I'm Todd Furman here at Bet the Board. Thank you, as always, to our parent sponsor, Bet Online. Remember, you don't have to bet the Monday night game just because it's on the board, but if you do, best of luck, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.